Travel presented by Vintage Guitar Magazine with your host, me, James Patrick Regan, otherwise known as Jimmy from the Deadlies. And today I'm speaking with bassist, guitarist, and band leader Kirk Baker. In our conversation, Kirk tells us about living in Brooklyn and working for Little Steven's record label, Wicked Cool Records, a label that he's also recording for. Kirk discusses his new single and when he might release a new album and his style of power pop music. Kirk describes how he got hooked up with Wicked Cool and how he eventually started working for the label. Kirk tells us about living and playing his music in Spain before working for Little Steven. And Kirk tells us about his musical history growing up in Maine and his band, The Leftovers, one of the first bands to do video blogs, and why that band disbanded and what made him go solo. Kirk describes his gear, both his basses and his guitars, and his Ampeg, Orange, and Vox amps, and he describes the backline situation in New York City. To find out more about Kirk, you can go to his socials at Kurt Milton Baker or his Bandcamp page, kurtbaker.bandcamp.com. That's kurtbaker.bandcamp.com, and check out Kurt's music. It's refreshing. Please subscribe, like, comment, share, and most of all, review this podcast. I'd really appreciate it. And please support Vintage Guitar Magazine and all the wonderful things they do for us guitar players, because they do so many wonderful things for us guitar players. Here's my friend Kurt. Hey there, Kurt.
Hey, how's it going?
How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing good. It looks like you're in a wheat field.
I am. This is where I live. I'm at work, but it's kind of a cool spot.
Yeah.
Sometimes people walk behind me and stuff. So.
Where are you at right now?
I'm in New York City, actually. Yeah, okay. Manhattan.
Is that where you're based?
I am. Yeah, I live in Brooklyn and work in Manhattan. Yeah.
What is the atmosphere like in that area right now?
Well, it's cold. Yeah. I'll tell you what. Yeah, it's pretty cold. Yeah, we had like a big snowstorm the other day, so I had to buy some snowshoes, and I'm from Maine, so I'm used to it, but I didn't have any snowshoes because I just moved to New York City, so I had to get those. And then, yeah, so it's winter here for sure. I don't know where you're at.
But, I'm in Napa, California. It is winter here too, but it's not, no snow.
Right. No snow. Yeah. It's a nice wine region, I hear, right?
It's a tourist town.
Okay, yeah, all right. I've never been up that way, but I have been to California.
Okay, cool.
Nice.
I listened to the single. It's fantastic. I mean,
oh, thank you.
It's I don't want to call it a throwback because it's not really a throwback. It sounds fresh and new, but it is it's very reminiscent of great pop or power pop music.
Totally. I mean, that was really the idea. I mean, I am considered a power pop artist, I'd say, but what I try to do is, like, you know, there's acts now, there's some newer power pop bands that are playing, and they try to recreate the old sounds of like the old 70s, 80s records. And I love those records, but I think for me, it's exactly kind of how you said it, like kind of taking all the influences and then kind of trying to keep it fresh, you know, modern.
Sure. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So that's the idea.
How did you get hooked up with Little Steven and Wicked Cool?
Well, actually, so it was about probably, I'd say about 10 years ago, actually, that I first did an album with Wicked Cool.
Okay.
But it was 2012 that I had songs getting played on the Underground Garage. And so that was kind of how I got introduced to the radio station and all the stuff that was going on there. And then they restarted Wicked Cool Records in 2016. Uh-huh. And so when they did that kind of Wicked Cool 2.0, they had asked me if I had any albums that I was planning on doing or if I wanted to, you know, put something out. And actually at the time I was living in Spain and I had one of the versions of my group, the Kurt Baker Combo. And we had actually just recorded an album and we were trying to shop it around, I guess. And so we, send it over to Steven and he liked it. So, that was kind of how I got started actually. Yeah. Like releasing records. And now actually, funny enough, I'm working at Wicked Cool Records.
So, oh, really?
Yeah. So I actually kind of I've seen both sides, you
sure,
know,
sure.
It's a unique, unique perspective to have, but yeah, so that's kind of how it all happened about. Yeah. Really kind of Wicked Cool Records 10 years ago now, 2016 it was, with this album I did called In Orbit.
Okay. All right. And what's your role with Wicked Cool?
Oh, so yeah, I'm basically like kind of running the day-to-day operations and doing a bit of A&R work as well. But, you know, I kind of communicate and talk to the bands directly and kind of facilitate, you know, from the demos to the actual, you know, release of the record. So sure. I kind of every step of the way. So it's a lot of fun, and yeah. I couldn't be happy. It sure beats working at Starbucks or at the Lobster Pound. I'll say that.
I have a feeling you've never worked at Starbucks or the Lobster Pal.
It's funny that you say that, because I have.
So do you work with like bands like the Chevelles and the Dolly Rots and all those guys?
That's right. Yep. All of those guys. The Chevelles are, I think they just wrapped up a tour in Spain, and they're going to be working on some new music, they told me. And then, the Dolly Rots, of course, they're always on the road, which is great. Yeah. I work with all the bands on the roster.
Right on. And so what were you doing in Spain?
Well, what I was doing in Spain, it was basically what the Chevelles were doing, was just playing music. But I ended up moving there because I really loved Spain and the culture, the laid back culture, and the great food. And I also had a lot of success there, so it was more manageable for me to be I wasn't full time musician, but I was about 80% of the time a musician. So it's better than in the States. It's a lot harder, but there it's a smaller country, but they have a big respect for rock and roll, and people come out and they buy the merch, and it's perfect. So I was kind of drawn to that, and so I ended up living there, and I moved there in 2013, and I was there for almost a good 12 years, I'd say. So it was actually Steven inviting me to work here in New York for the record label that kind of made me move back.
Right on. And so what are the venues like in Spain? Like, what's it like to play around the area?
Oh, well, I mean, you've got a whole, whole array of different venues in Spain. But I'd say, in terms of like rock and roll, the venues are kind of like, it's like paradise. Some of these places kind of are like CBGBs. Some of them are a little more clean, but it's a lot of the places that I've played over the years in Spain have been just great. And sometimes the sound is amazing, sometimes it's not, but it's really more about the people that are there that set the ambiance, it's usually a pretty wild time. So I can't wait to go back. It's been a while since I played there. I haven't played there since I lived there a couple of years ago, so I hope to make it happen. Maybe when a new album is out, but that's going to be a little bit, cause I am working on it. So the new single, like Undertow Afterglow, that will probably be on the album, but I'm still kind of in the process of writing. So taking it step by step, I'm not in a rush, so I just want to make the best album I can.
Yeah, of course. Of course. And you're a producer as well?
I do. Yeah. I mean, I produce, I'd like to kind of get more into producing other bands, but I've just kind of learned how to do it just producing my own music. But, the last real project that I produced, was actually a band from the Basque country in Spain called John Dealer and the Coconuts. And, they funny name, but really rocking band. And they've kind of got like this Scandinavian action rock sound, like the Helicopters or something like that. Sure. And they were great. So I produced that record with my friend Ula. So we kind of co-produced it together, but we were very involved in everything from the songs all the way up to, the guitar tones and everything. So it was a very hands-on production. And that was something that I really enjoyed. I had a lot of fun doing that.
Yeah. Right on. So tell me about growing up in Maine.
Oh yeah, Maine. Well, Maine is it's one of those states that's just massive. There's a lot of space, but there aren't that many people. So, growing up, I was in the biggest city, Portland, Maine. And honestly, for the city its size, it did have a pretty great music scene. So like I was able to really get into, seeing punk rock shows and, ska shows and things like that. when I was, 13, 14, and that really, you know, got me playing in a band pretty early on. And, and again, we had venues that we could play, like, you know, whether it be, you know, an AmVets hall or a basement of a church or something like that, or, you know, a youth club or something. but there were places to play, you know? And so I was very fortunate to grow up in a city that, kind of was, you were able to do your dream of rocking and rolling at a young age. So, I mean, growing up in, it was like, the thing was back then you didn't get a lot of the touring bands coming through. So it was really hard to see some of your favorite bands.
Yeah.
But that's kind of changed now. I think a lot more bands have been going up there. There's a lot more venues. And it's kind of, I think just as, you know, it has become kind of part of the greater Boston almost, you know? So you do get a lot more acts. So, I mean, I think if I was a teenager, you know, in the last 10 years up there, I would have been able to see like so many more bands that I probably bought records from than I was able to back in the day. And I think that's the reason why Portland's got a really big, like, local music scene. So, you know, and people love the local bands, and it kind of exists in its own bubble. And I think that's because for a long time, we didn't get a ton of national touring bands coming through Maine. It really, you know, it was not like if you're trying to plan out a tour, you know, you have to go up to Maine, and there's not much you can go to after that. I mean, if you're going to Montreal or, you know, Canada, but now it's kind of different. So, you know, but it's cool.
Yeah. Right on. And was guitar your first instrument?
So my first instrument was actually the cello, actually. So I started playing cello, and that was interesting. I still love the cello. I love the way it sounds. But actually from the cello, I went to the bass guitar, and I can't help but thinking of, you know, Jack Black and School of Rock when it goes, cello, it's a bass, you know. Yeah. That's exactly what happened to me, you know. But I started with the bass, and still I kind of consider myself a bass player, though I do play guitar as well. So yeah. I kind of started playing guitar just kind of out of the need, really, to write songs, you know, because you can only write so much on a bass.
And what was your first bass?
So my first bass was actually, it was, and I still have it today. I still play it. It's a Fender Precision bass. It's from Mexico. And I remember I went into the store, there's a local guitar shop in Portland, Maine called Buck Dancer's Choice. And it's a great shop. It's, you know, locally owned, great staff. It's still there. And just great. Whenever I'm back in town and I need a guitar, I like to go there. You know, this was back in like 2000. Yeah, I think it was 2000. I'd saved up enough money and I was like, I've got to buy a bass. So I go in there and I'm thinking, I want a blue bass, you know, something that looks cool, like a blue. I go in there and I'm like, you guys got a blue Fender bass? And they're like, no, we don't, but we could order you one. And I'm like, oh, great. Yeah. And they're like, what kind of color do you want? And I was like, you know, blue. And they're like, well, there's a couple different blues you can choose from, like, you know, a navy blue or a midnight blue. And I go, oh, midnight blue, that sound, I want that. And now this was when I think with the guitar, like the computer that they were using was just an old, you know, computer, just to get a list. There's no images on there. I didn't have a phone. I couldn't look it up, you know? So I was like, midnight blue sounds great. So they're like, well, it's going to take like probably like 4 weeks to get it. So I'm like, yeah, all right, well, I'm going to wait. So I'll wait. Bass shows up. I'm all excited. Go down to the guitar store, open it up, and it's purple, basically.
Oh, wow.
it's this weird finish that, depending on the lighting, it's either blue or it's purple. And it's now, I think, it's very much discontinued. But I was like, well, what am I going to do? I mean, this is it. And you know what? That bass has been with me for years. So, you know, I can't knock it. I actually just got it kind of refurbished and everything when I came down to New York. I know a guy that does it, Matt Gabb's Guitar. And he put some new pickups on it, cleaned it up. It had been through a lot. I mean, I put that thing through the ringer, just touring and just throwing it around, not giving a shit or anything about it. And it's still, you know, it never broke. I had this Gibson Firebird that, you know, I thought it was the coolest looking guitar, but it ended up having like a curse or something on it. Cause it's like, it just kept on breaking one time. It just like, it fell and the whole thing just snapped. And I was like, God damn. And it didn't even sound that good. So I was like, you know, it sometimes these guitars, they've got curses on them. Sometimes they've got, you know, guardian angel looking over it. And his face just never had a problem with it.
Yeah. So it was a Firebird guitar, or was it a Thunderbird bass that you're talking about?
Oh, it wasn't a Thunderbird bass. No, it was a Firebird guitar. So when I was playing guitar in Spain, that was really like when I had the combo. I was doing guitar, and I had bought that. Not my favorite. Looks cool, but yeah.
What are you playing for guitar now?
Well, actually, funny enough, I just bought the Noel Gallagher Epiphone, the signature Epiphone.
Okay,
and I love it. You know, I've always loved the hollow body guitars, I've been obsessed with Oasis for a long time, and I just kind of was like, you know what, I want to get, you know, that guitar.
Sure.
And it doesn't, you know, it doesn't have Noel Gallagher's face on it or anything like that. So, you know, it's just got a little signature on the headstock, but, but it looks cool. It sounds good. I like those big guitars. I love the hollow body guitars. Cause like, you know, for songwriting too, it's like, you can just, you don't have to plug it in. You can just sit on the couch and, you know,
sure. Is it shaped like a 335 or what's the shape of it?
Well, it's like, it's like a Riviera.
Oh yeah.
Body. Okay. So it's basically, you know, stuff like that. Yeah. But it's a nice guitar. It wasn't too expensive. I don't usually buy expensive guitars because I can't afford it. And also I'm afraid that it'll break them. But, it's a nice one. It's nice.
So were you playing in high school bands and stuff like that?
Yeah. Well, actually my high school band ended up being like, kind of the band that kind of jump started my career as a musician. We were a band called The Leftovers.
Okay. And,
we were like a pop punk band, very much like, you know, Ramones, Green Day, that kind of thing.
Yep.
Very influenced by like 90s Lookout Records. And we started when we were, sophomores in high school. And we took that, you know, we were a band for about, I'd say, 8 years. And we toured all over the world. And, that's where I went to Spain for the first time, and that's kind of how I fell in love with Spain, was touring there with The Leftovers. So not a lot of people can say that their, you know, high school band was, you know, able to do all that, but we did it, and it was cool.
Yeah. So how did you get that success? Like, I mean, did you guys sign up with management, or how did you?
No, we were very DIY. We were really DIY, but we were lucky because we had the support. We played a lot. And in our touring and things like that, it led us to be kind of in front of, you know, some influential artists. So, like, for example, there was this guy, Ben Weasel, who's the singer of Screeching Weasel. He really loved our records, and he's got a big following. And this was like, you know, back in 2006 or so, he had a blog, and so he didn't really talk too much about bands at the time. Uh-huh. And he made a big post about us, and then we started getting all these messages like, hey, come to England, come to Europe, wow, come, you know, to California and things like that. So you know, that's kind of how it kind of jumped off. We never had a manager. We kind of self-managed ourselves. And it worked. I mean, it worked until it didn't work anymore. But we learned a lot that way. You know, sometimes you don't like when you have all the experience doing it yourself, you're like, why do I need a manager? But you know, when life gets crazy, you want to have one, that's not, you know, not involved in the songwriting and the day, you know, stuff like that. But
yeah,
I'm still looking for a manager.
Excuse me for being naive, but like, how do you guys, as kids, how do you get to England? Like, how do you get your gear there and all that? Like,
yeah, we didn't get our gear there. We actually just flew over there, and we had no idea who was booking the tour. It was this guy named Jacob, and he sent us an email. So we're like, oh, great. So we
right on.
We get there, and he shows up, and He's with his mom. His mom came to pick us up, and so we had no idea, but it was pretty interesting. So, you know, we were renting gear, and then, you know, we had that first tour was pretty wild because he had rented a van. A guy came from Germany, and there was some disagreement after the first show, and we woke up the next morning, the van was gone.
Wow.
So we had to, for the first leg of that first England tour that we did, we took every form of transportation. You know, we'd get off the train and have to pile into one of those big taxi cabs, and they'd drop us off in front of the pub before the pub was even open. So we'd be standing on the corner with all our gear, and, you know. And then, you know, like a week later, we found another guy that had a van, and he took us around. But it was pretty interesting.
That's
yeah.
crazy. Right on. I mean, what a life experience.
Yeah, it was. It was.
and so what led to the demise?
I really got used to hanging out at the pubs. That's I learned all about that.
What led to the demise of the Leftovers?
Well, you know, we had been touring a lot. We'd been on the road a lot. Our drummer actually ended up getting a job in California, and we were based in Maine.
Yeah.
And it was unfortunate because we were at the point where it's like, if we had kind of continued for another year, we probably would have reached it where we could really start making a living and doing it. But he decided to go to California, and pursue a different career. And the other two guys in the band didn't want to play with a different drummer. So it kind of was like, we kind of stalled out. And that kind of led me to pursue the kind of solo career.
Sure.
I never really, you know, as just Kurt Baker, and that's kind of stuck, you know, but it's been one of those things where I've been able to play with a lot of different musicians, different lineups, but you know, the guys that have recorded the majority of my albums are all, you know, really just my best friends and great musicians. So it was, you know, kind of a blessing in disguise, because I was able then to really start to write and record the songs that I was hearing in my head, and it wasn't so limited to this kind of pop punk straightforward thing, you know.
What was the job that he left for?
Oh, he went, he was doing audio engineering for a TV show.
Okay.
So he kind of got hooked into that. And
yeah.
He's still doing it today, actually. Yeah.
Okay.
we've been talking actually about doing a reunion, but it just hasn't materialized, but maybe at some point we would. I don't know if people still even listen to the band, but yeah,
I just
might fun for us. All right, there you go.
You guys are great. When you go solo, so to speak, is it just you and acoustic guitar in the beginning? Are you playing shows?
Well, so what happened was during the last year, the Leftovers, the record label that we were on, wanted to work kind of more with me. And they had this idea to do this this covers album. So I actually recorded my first kind of EP as a solo artist, doing all these like 70s and 80s new wave covers. And I worked with some studio guys for that.
Uh-huh.
But I didn't have a band, so it was really, you know, just a solo thing. And when I got back from recording that, I put together kind of a little kind of ragtag group for our album release show. And then I ended up flying over to Europe, and I had a band called Radio Days. They backed me up.
Okay.
And then that was really good. And then when I got back from Europe, I was like, all right, I got to put a band together, you know?
Yeah.
So that was like kind of the thing. So I've done acoustic shows, but it was, and I will still do them, but, it just that it was one of those things that is like I didn't want to be involved in a band again in that sense, just coming out of being in a band. So like, you know, just kind of being like Kurt Baker, that's kind of more liberating. I can do whatever I want.
Absolutely.
I can play with whoever I want.
Yeah.
You know, it's got its you know, ups and downs, you know, benefits and, you know, negative sides to that too, because it's like, sometimes you miss the camaraderie of being in a band with the same people all the time. And it's harder to kind of evolve, you know, it's the sound when you've got different people kind of coming in and out from the sessions and stuff like that. But, you know, it does give you the the artistic freedom to do whatever you want, play with whoever you want. So, yeah.
And you're super prolific. How many releases have you done?
I don't know. I have no idea at this point. I mean, if you want to include all the soul, like the side projects and stuff that I've done, I don't know. But yeah, I was doing about one full length album every 2 years since I started, you know, like releasing stuff in 2002 or so. So yeah, I mean, including everything, I don't know. a lot.
And have you been touring at the same time this whole time?
Well, not really. No, I've kind of taken a break from touring. I was doing a lot of touring when I was in Spain. In the States, not so much, just because logistically it's not as easy.
Yeah.
But the last year as well, like I didn't play that many gigs. So I took a break because I was focusing more on the job and stuff. But yeah. But who knows? Maybe I'm actually thinking about playing some gigs this year. I haven't booked anything yet, but there's some opportunities coming that I might jump in on. Yeah.
Would you carry a band or is it just you?
Oh yeah. If I was to do, you know, shows, it would be with a band. Yeah. Right. The acoustic thing's fun and I'll do that, but like, you know, I'm not really able to really feel super satisfied with it. It is satisfying. It's fun to do the acoustic stuff, but I just prefer playing in a band. So
yeah, of course.
And doing the rock and roll thing. You know?
There's nothing like it. And as far as guitars and stuff, now you mentioned the Sheraton or the Epiphone.
Yeah, the Epiphone. Yep.
Yeah. And the P bass. What else do you have as far as guitars?
So I've got like a nice acoustic that I've been playing, and it's another one of those guitars that I bought at Buck Dancers, and it's actually this German company, and I think it's called AMR, and it's a small company, but it's like one of those Gibson Juggernaut, I think they're called, the acoustics.
Yeah.
You know, it's modeled after that. It looks like, you know, it's like one of those John Lennon acoustic guitars.
Sure.
So I use that for acoustic, and then that's really kind of what I've got right now. Yeah. I have, you know, a couple other, I have a few guitars over in Europe that I haven't really touched in a while, but I had an SG, which I wasn't really, I'm not a big SG guy, 'cause it's too small for me, but I had
an SG. Was it the blue SG?
No, I wish it was. Yeah. I love those blue SGs. But it was just a regular black.
Okay.
Yeah, Epiphone SG, actually. And then, yeah, I've got a couple Fender Precision basses. Those are the only basses I really play the Fender Precision. Yeah.
And did you get rid of the Firebird?
I did. I sold it. I actually sold it for more. I sold it for more than I bought it for. Even after all the crap that went on. Yeah. So, yeah.
And what are you using for amps?
Yeah, so amps, I've got, you know, the Ampeg SVT for the bass.
Right on. Are you dragging that around New York City?
No, that's up in Maine. And I had a Ampeg V4 amp for a little bit too, but that was even heavier. So,
wow.
Yeah, I mean, it was one of those V4s that was like, it could be used for as a guitar amp as well.
Yeah, like the Rolling Stones used.
Yes, exactly. So that was cool. I liked having that, but I actually sold that for various reasons. But sure. I sold that one. But normally I like to play Orange amps, and I like to play Vox, the AC, you know, AC30s.
Sure.
You know, depending on what's around. I do, like, here in New York City right now, though, I don't have any amps that I use. I kind of use the back lines for if there's a venue.
Yeah.
But I do have some stuff up at the old storage unit in Maine.
Okay, yeah. Cool. Right on. And I was going to ask about backline. Like, so is it pretty tedious, the backline stuff that's in the clubs in New York?
You know, you kind of make what you got to make with what you have there. But it's generally pretty good, you know. It depends on the club, but a lot of the venues that I've played and I've seen bands play at, it's generally good, you know.
Yeah.
If you're in Manhattan, you're going to see a show, you don't want it to sound like crap. So these clubs, you know, they keep it pretty nice for people. So yeah.
And the do you have to bring pedals just to soften it up a little bit?
Yeah, you do. I am not really much of a pedal guy. I really, when I was playing a lot with the combo, I had, you know, my tuner, and I had like a boost, and just sometimes I use the like a distortion pedal, you know, the rat pedal. But I'm not much of a pedal guy, really. You know, I'd like to probably get into it more, but I haven't gotten there because I'm very much. Yeah, I know. I mean, I kind of go into it with a bass mindset. Like I get really worried if I see bass players with a huge pedal board.
Oh, God.
You know, I don't want to be that guy.
So when you tour,
no offense. So
when you tour, are you going to be playing bass or guitar or both?
It really depends. You know, right now I'm with the lineup that I'm trying to work out here in New York City, I am playing guitar, just because I can control the song a little bit more.
Sure.
I do miss playing the bass, but until I find, you know, guitar players that can, you know, play it, you know, I can do it. So, but it really depends. You know, the last gig that I did with my band in Asbury Park last year, I was playing bass because it was with the lineup, my old lineup. So,
yeah.
So, and that is really kind of where it's the tightest, you know, for me.
Yeah.
Because I am a bass player, so I sing, and I got that all down. I feel way more confident doing it that way. But it all depends on the situation and who's available.
Yeah. Of course. Is it a revolving door of musicians for the most part?
Well, I wouldn't say it's a revolving door. I'd say it's, it depends on where I'm playing,
yeah.
You know? So, but I've got a group of about, you know, 10, 12 people that I can call.
Yeah.
Most of them are drummers so it's not, I wouldn't say it's a revolving door. I usually kind of try and keep with the same cats.
Sure.
Depending on availability, but yeah, I mean, right now with what I'm thinking of doing here in New York, it would be more or less a newer lineup.
Okay,
right. Because none of the guys that I used to play with actually live in the city. So, yeah. Why no website? Yeah, because I had a website. Most of my stuff is just kind of on either Facebook or Instagram, and then Bandcamp if you want to buy the music. So it's like, at some point, you know, the website was good for putting tour dates in, and then it just kind of fell off, and I never got around to updating it. I don't think I have the domain anymore. But yeah, you know, the social media stuff I think that's the best way. And you can connect with everyone, all the fans and stuff. So,
exactly.
Yeah.
And you were doing demos for, what's the music store that you were doing demos for? Yeah, you had on your Instagram page, you have your playing guitars for a music store there in Brooklyn.
Oh, those demos. Yeah. Oh, that's a great, yeah, that's called Tone Wolf. Those are my buddies. Yeah. That's a great store. They have some good stuff there. Yeah. None of those guitars are mine, but
no.
I love playing them. Yeah. Go check that store out. Yeah, it's good.
Are you going to continue to do that?
I'd love to. Yeah, if they invite me back. They gave me some cool t-shirts and stuff. I'm having dinner with the owner on Saturday. So,
what's it like living in you know, in New York financially, like trying to scrape by?
Well, you know, it's way more expensive than you know, day-to-day life is much more expensive here than it is in Spain. You know, you go grocery shopping and you buy five things and it costs almost $100 you know, 50, 60 euros in Spain could get you enough food for the whole week. So that's one of the things, you know, and it is a little more expensive. But you know,
what's
it's
rent
a big
like?
City.
Yeah.
Rent. I mean, rent's pretty expensive. I've got a one bedroom apartment and that in Brooklyn. And it's not even like, I wouldn't say it's the nicest neighborhood, but it's over 2K. So, you know, but it's my own space. I like it. I can't complain. I got a roof over my head. I got a cool job. I can make music, put out records. So
yeah,
living the dream.
Yeah, you are. So if people want to get a hold of you, do they go to your Bandcamp site? Is that the best way to, if they want to buy the music?
If they want to get the new single, that's the way to go. And then you can download stuff that way too if you want that.
Uh-huh. And that's then, you know, it's Bandcamp. It's
kurtbaker.bandcamp.com.
Okay,
yeah,
cool.
That's it. Yeah. So I'd go there. That goes right to me. And so that's the best way to support. But then, you know, my records are available online at most online music distribution stores and things like that.
Yeah.
So yeah, that would probably be the best one. And then, you know, Instagram, Kurt Milton Baker, and Facebook as well. So Kurt Baker Music is the Facebook handle.
Yep. And you got a lot of videos on YouTube.
YouTube. Yeah. They can check out the YouTube videos. Yeah.
And there's leftovers videos there too.
There are. There's a lot of leftovers videos, actually. We used to do before, you know, TikTok and, you know, short videos were a thing. We were doing these video blogs back in the day and no one was really doing them. And we did it every day. So you can actually go back and watch like a couple of years worth of every day on the road.
Wow.
We would do something. It was tedious work, but I'm glad that we did it because, you know, we were very, you know, if only we had done it, you know, a little bit later, we would have been, you know, probably onto something, but
sure,
we were still doing it, you know.
Right on.
And it's all there
for
people to look
at. That's cool.
Yeah.
Well, it's a pleasure to speak with you, Kurt.
All right. Thank you, James. I really appreciate it. I had a great time talking with you.
I hope I get to meet you in person when you come out to California next time.
Absolutely. I need to get there. I'm having, you know, here in New York right now, I'm having some California dreaming. As the mamas and the papas famously saying. So, yeah.
All right. Well, thank you, sir.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Take care.
Easy. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Have Guitar Will Travel. You can catch up on all the things I'm doing at thedeadlies.com. And I'm on all the social media platforms as well. And please support Vintage Guitar and all the wonderful things they do, because they do many, many wonderful things for us guitar players. Thanks. Please subscribe. Please tell a friend. And I'll see you guys next week. Bye, guys.